From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Ryan Famuliner. During Pope Francis's visit to the U.S. last month, he offered praise for Thomas Merton. Merton was one of the most influential Catholic writers of the 20th century. He spent the last 20 years of his life as a Trappist monk in a monastery in Kentucky. After his death, his writings remained in the public sphere, but it seemed that little else was left from the man who inspired so many. KBIA's Emerald O'Brien found out how hundreds of Merton's personal items recently reappeared in Missouri.
When Thomas Merton died in 1968, a fellow monk at his monastery named Brother Irenaeus was given just one order: get rid of everything belonging to Thomas Merton.
Get everything. Get his stuff and get it out of here. I don't care what you do with it. Don't tell me what you do with it. Just get it out of here.
The abbot was worried about admirers coming to the monastery to hunt for souvenirs. So that's what Brother Irenaeus did. And for nearly 50 years, it was as though Merton's personal life outside of his writing never existed at all. Until this summer.
I will just say I am spiritual. Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good answer. I like that.
Yeah. John Smeltzer is an author who lives in Kirksville. This summer, while working on a book inspired by the writings of Thomas Merton, he was told of a woman living in Kansas City who owned all of Merton's belongings.
So some little old lady somewhere in Missouri has all of Thomas Merton's personal possessions. I have never heard of that. No one's ever heard of that.
So with his acquaintance who knew her, he arranged a meeting. And at the end, he asked her about the rumor. He says there was a little hesitation, but then she brought him to her garage and showed him two large trunks.
She opens them up, and they're just full, just cram-packed with every single thing Thomas Merton owned at the time of his death. Everything, right down to like his toothbrush.
The woman's name is Helen Marie. We're excluding her last name to protect her identity. And the story of how she came to have these things begins in the 1960s. Helen Marie was a nun in Brooklyn, and by this time, Merton's writing was already famous. All the nuns in her abbey were reading him. And one day, Helen Marie decided she'd like to meet the man that she and all her friends admired so much. So she told her abbot.
And he personally reached into his wallet, gave her the money for a round-trip ticket on a Greyhound, and said, just go. Don't write to him. Don't call. Because they might say no. Just show up.
She went in the dead of winter, arriving in Kentucky during a snowstorm. And being a monastery, they couldn't exactly turn away a nun to the cold. So they put her in a cottage, and she waited.
And for the first day, he wouldn't come see her. Second day, he wouldn't come see her. But he started to admire the tenacity of this little nun who, I'm not leaving.
I finally was allowed to see him. And I had my first visit with him, and I thought, how am I going to approach this wonderful, famous, you know, mystic with my lack of expertise and knowledge that most people have? But anyway, he was so simple and so wonderful to talk to. I felt totally at ease.
Helen Marie moved to Kentucky, to the abbey just down the road, and Merton became her spiritual mentor. Every Sunday, she'd join him at the monastery for guidance. They were friends. They'd talk and laugh. Sometimes they'd have picnics. Sometimes another monk would join them, Brother Irenaeus. And as every good story goes, Brother Irenaeus and Sister Helen began to fall in love. But nuns and monks can't marry, so they brought their worries to Merton.
He said, you've gotten everything there was to get out of your monastic life. He said, grow in new areas. Grow beyond that. And I never forgot that. And I never expected that coming from him. It was quite the opposite.
Shortly after his death, Helen Marie and Brother Irenaeus left the convent, taking with them Merton's belongings that Irenaeus had been charged with. They married and eventually moved to Kansas City for work. And for 50 years, all of Merton's things stayed hidden in two large trunks under the clutter of Helen Marie's garage. After her husband died in 2009, she didn't know what to do with them. So, like any good former nun, she began to pray.
I felt that I was to share this, not to keep it for myself. And then when John came, I was so happy because I knew it was an answer to prayer.
Helen Marie decided to give John Smeltzer all the belongings that she had been keeping, trusting him to deliver them to the right places. So Smeltzer spent the rest of the summer researching the items and where they came from and who they should go to next.
Yeah, I was really completely in the dark when John made contact with us.
This is where Dr. Paul Pearson comes in. He's the director of the Thomas Merton Center at Bellarmine University in Louisville, Kentucky. Smeltzer made a pilgrimage from Kirksville to Kentucky in late July to show Dr. Pearson pictures of what he had.
And so it all just came together. I mean, it just all, the whole story came together. There was no doubt, and they said, yes, yes, we want the materials.
Smeltzer had clothes, he had letters, he had photographs, he even had underwear. But Merton's things weren't in pristine condition, and not because they hadn't been stored properly.
One of the things I've noticed from looking at these clothes especially is they prove that Merton walked the walk. He lived the poor monk. Here's another one of his denim work shirts. Look at this thing. Paint all over it from working, ripped to pieces, threadbare, stitched here and there where it's ripped.
Okay, so at this point, you might be wondering, how do we know for sure that all of this is real? Some guy in Missouri has a bunch of ripped up shirts. I mean, those could belong to anyone.
Every single piece of clothing of Thomas Merton has this on it, at some place. It's a little tag with the number 127. And here's what it is. It's a laundry tag.
All of Merton's clothing at the monastery was marked with this number, 127, scribbled in pen on the collar of his t-shirts, in Sharpie on a patch that had been sewn in. Some of them even had one or two numbers crossed out before Merton's, meaning they were hand-me-downs.
You just see his real embrace of the monastic life and the poverty that was involved with it.
Smeltzer donated most of the items to the Thomas Merton Center in Louisville, but he also has items that he's working to send to places like the Thomas Merton Center for Social Justice in Pittsburgh and Columbia University, where Merton studied. Oh, and one more place.
And this shirt right here that I'm holding, I'm giving to Pope Francis. I've already written to him. I want to give it to the Vatican because I didn't know how much he admired Merton until that speech to Congress.
After 50 years and an extended vacation to Missouri, Merton's finally going home. Or at least his things are. Emerald O'Brien, KBIA News, Columbia.